Welcome to the Cultivating Business Growth Podcast, bringing you bi-weekly discussions designed to help you grow your business and create the lifestyle you desire. Elevate your business with proven strategies from virtual CFOs, CPAs, and business advisors. We discuss real-world challenges solved with actionable steps that get you the results you need, both in business and building the life you deserve.
Welcome to episode number 139 of the Cultivating Business Growth Podcast, brought to you by PJS and Co. CPAs. We are here bringing you part two of the 10 more strategic questions for your CFO. So as a reminder, we went over the first five in episode 138, part one, that covered capital allocation, financial forecasting, cost optimization, market analysis, and compliance and regulation. So if you are interested in listening to any of those, please go back and start there. And we are going to continue that conversation today with Katina Peters. Thanks for joining me again today to wrap up this two-part series.
Hey, thanks for having me, Megan. It's a good conversation. I like discussing this stuff.
Yeah, fun stuff. As we said, we kind of went into the last episode, just kind of, we want to arm our listeners with something to use as more of a partnership as you have these discussions with your controller, with your CFO, so that you feel like you can contribute more to the conversation, you have questions to ask, you feel like you're more knowledgeable walking into these meetings. So it's really the goal of why we're having this discussion today and the importance of these questions and conversations that you have as you proactively manage your business with your advisor.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of a little bit of a cheat sheet of the questions you can go in with, so you're not having to recreate the wheel and you're thinking of these higher level things for your business. And I know I shared the other day, like going into the doctor, if you're writing down your questions, you're preparing, you know, for the meeting, you're more likely to just get more out of it all in all as you're coming out of something like that. So you're not walking in cold. So I think it's a good thing to take a moment and just look through these questions. And, you know, these, again, there's 10 questions here and there was other questions in our episode 114 as well. So, you know, you don't need to ask all these questions in one meeting necessarily. Right. Pick the ones that you're most concerned about or the most interest you about your business and, you know, have these to work through as you go. Cause that's, you know, obviously a lot of questions for one meeting and a lot of deep thought and consideration going into things, but it is, they're all really good ways to look at your business from different angles.
Perfect. Well, we'll jump right in as this is a continuation. And the first topic that we want to cover is debt management. So one of the great questions that you can ask is how can we effectively manage our debt and leverage to enhance our financial position?
Yeah. So we want to be responsible with our debt. That's always been our motto. We want to make sure that we're utilizing it correctly. Now, sometimes growth needs financing or acquisitions need financing, things like that. So what we recommend is we work with business owners to, you know, make sure they're leveraging that debt responsibly, that it's got a good, you know, return in the long run, that what we're investing in, what we're financing, is going to promise a good return. Now, can we promise everything? No, as we talked about before, when we're doing forecasting, when we're looking forward, we're putting our best guesses into things, but we can make some pretty good educated guesses that way with regards to using our debt. So some of the things we want to do just in the business in general is establishing those reserve accounts for operations and taxes, you know, and looking at, do we want debt to help offset that? Now, some of that's going to come into play, like what does the current debt landscape look like out there in the economy? You know, we make some different choices. Are we going to use our own reserves for certain capital needs over getting a high interest debt because the interest rates are high? We might say, yeah, we're more comfortable with that. And we will wait for the interest rates to come down. And then, you know, we will maybe refund our reserves out of getting some lower interest rate debt or something like that. So we do look at that landscape. And then the landscape also is to, you know, how open is the lending market? How much are we going to have to go through, you know, to obtain that debt? Because there's definitely times in the economy where you're put through much more of a ringer and you have to put a lot of more man hours and time and analysis and things in. You may have more covenants to fulfill on that debt because, you know, banks are nervous, economically speaking, or something like that. So, you know, we look at that. We've also talked, obviously, about the lines of credit. I always recommend that you're looking at getting a line of credit as soon as you can as a business and before you need it, for sure, because they don't want to give it to you when you need it. They want to give it to you when you don't need it. Right. But once you established with them, then it's available. So, you know, if you had to dip into it, you know, typically lines of credit are going to require a personal guarantee and those kinds of things. So, you know, be prepared for that as well. But it's good to have that to fall back in if you need to. All right. So we talked about financing equipment purchases. I think that's a big one. One of the things that's nice about that is a lot of banks are happy to take collateral. You know, they like collateralized loans. So those are a little easier, you know, to finance. So if you, and especially if you can get a good rate, whether that's through a bank really, or maybe the vendor, sometimes vendors have good finance options and they're trying to make a deal, sell it, you know, get their revenue going. So sometimes you can get better, more favorable rates going through a vendor financing, something along those lines. So those are good things, good options to consider for equipment purchases. Again, we've talked about just planning ahead generally. So, you know, looking ahead and seeing where your potential bumps in the road might be, or where you think you're going to need a big capital purchase or a big influx of personnel or, you know, something like that, being prepared for those times. And again, not scrambling to obtain the debt at the last minute, or, oh shoot, I'm out of money, now I need to go get debt, because that becomes much more of a challenge typically. If you can give some really strong financials and a strong trajectory, and obviously we would be planning not to be in that situation for the long term, but we may have a blip in the radar from a cash flow perspective that we need to cover, but we want to be doing that and planning for it ahead of time, so that we aren't giving, you know, going to the bank when our bank account has $2,000 left in it or something like that. Cause then they're like, not sure I want to give you money.
Right.
So we want to make sure that we're, you know, being proactive about when we're going to be needing those kinds of things. So.
Yeah. And like we talked about, I mean, a lot of these questions help you prepare to be more on the offensive rather than the defensive, and
right,
reacting to things, you know, kind of puts you in a bad spot. So better to have these conversations ahead of time.
Yeah, not to mention your stress levels as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, when you know you have that kind of safety net to fall back on if you need it versus, oh my gosh, now we're in this position. What the heck do we do?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, next question focuses on technology investments. So what technology investments or upgrades can improve our financial processes and overall efficiency?
Yeah, I think that's a great question to ask on a continual basis. One of the things that we've worked into our service offering when we're working with our clients is a once a month operations meeting. And the reason for that is to, you know, have that time specifically dedicated to looking at how we're running things. It is a little more accounting and finance focused, but it also involves operations. So a lot of times operations team members might be part of those meetings. So we can say, okay, what is it that we're currently doing? What technologies are out there that could make this easier, and making sure that we're continually improving those. And we can keep that constant improvement happening. Now, I say that, but we're also not looking to jump on every shiny new piece of technology that comes out every week or month or whatever. So, you know, we want to have still that longer game in mind when we're looking at things, but we also want to make sure that we're staying open to change, open to looking at new things and new ways of doing things. We don't want to fall behind the curve, you know, when it comes to technology and staying up on things as a business and miss out on, you know, opportunities and efficiencies and things like that that we can gain. So we do want to make sure that we're stopping and stepping back. And a lot of times from an accounting perspective, we look at it like, how are we handling our billing and receivables? What could be more efficient? What could be made better in that? What's the P pain points for us? What's the pain points maybe for the customers, like payment methods or something like that? What can we change? And, you know, that may just be an operational change. Maybe we're just collecting automatically every month or something like that. Maybe it's not a how we're collecting. It's just, I mean, how in the way that we're actually obtaining the money, but how we're collecting rather than sending a bill and then waiting for them to pay or, you know, things like that. So there's things that can happen operationally or accounting technology wise to smooth those things out. And then we look at payables and we look at payroll. And so basically your processes on the accounting side, how do we smooth those out? What things could be made better? And then we, of course, just pay some attention to what are the new technologies that are coming out and how could we leverage those effectively in the long term? What would make the best option for us? Some things to keep in mind, obviously, automation is huge out there. So that's a necessity in some areas that you're, or as many areas really as possible. So you're not duplicating things, you're not doing things more than once. You know, things are seamlessly integrating as much as possible. So we want to try to look for those types of integrated or integratable tools to leverage. Sometimes that's different systems talking to each other, you know, what works well from that perspective. So looking at, you know, if you're in a specific accounting software, a lot of times they have like a little marketplace or other tools they work with, things like that. So you want to keep those things in mind so that we can keep that integration up. And we have to balance that between, is the integration more valuable? Is the tool more valuable? So maybe the tool has such a value that we won't get as much on the integration side, or it's a little more of a manual process versus the other. So we have to look at those things. So, you know, electronic processes, e-payment tools like bill.com, we've talked about before, again, can be very cost effective rather than issuing paper checks. Or even there are the bill pay systems like through your bank or things like that, which are good, but typically require more access control from the person issuing the checks or more time from you as an owner or leadership team. So if we can delegate those things more easily in a tool like bill.com that has its own access controls, it has a good tracking system in it, you can see who did what, you can see who approved it, those kinds of things, it's much more systematized from a quality control perspective. So that's not the only tool, it's just an example of one that is a good way to go to save the cost, save the time, and remove some of the frustration from your people. Like if they can get stuff done easier, quickly, more efficiently. And they like that. They prefer, you know, to do things like that, generally speaking. So obviously there's lots of other things to consider there, but there's a little bit of a example.
Yeah. No, I like that you listed out the benefits too, because a lot of times, especially like if you talk to your operations department, right, or your accounting team, and you mention, oh, we're going to switch this technology, the first thought is, oh my gosh, that's so much chaos. I don't even want to deal with it. I know the system I'm in, you know. So, you know, again, like coming back to the, we don't want to jump on every shiny new thing because that's just going to frustrate everybody at your organization too, right? Like, it does create a lot to learn and new things to transition and all of that. Like, so there's these big benefits that you can gain, but you want to be careful and strategic about when you're doing that and timing it correctly. You know, I know Jamie and I had that conversation about the payroll transition. That's what brought to mind, you know? So like making sure that you're not transitioning five new things at once too, you know, or timing of the year, all those things, but also focusing on the benefits and helping your team see the light at the end of the tunnel, as far as, I know it's work now, but it is going to automate these things. It's going to make your job easier. It's going to be more efficient. All those things can help in the communication with your team and seeing why you're making these investments in the technology too.
Yes, super important. I think, you know, when we're talking a little bit about change management, I guess, but because it relates so much to technology and technology changes so quickly, I think you also want to keep in mind, like you're saying, that change management that you're involving your team and maybe some of the decisions and looking at some of the options that you're, like you said, communicating with them, letting them see the possibilities and the pros and the, you know, things that will be good. And I guess just how you wrap it, you know, it sounds funny, but you know, it's like how you present it, how you frame it, does make a difference. It does impact people's impressions when it, you know, when you have a meeting, you say, here's what we're doing. Here's why we're doing it. I'm really excited about this. And here's why I think it's going to save you guys so much time and it's going to be so much easier. And, you know, whatever those benefits are that you want to list out. But I think that that definitely comes across and builds more, not that they won't be apprehensive about it still, but it builds more of that camaraderie and excitement around it, as opposed to you get an email, hey, we're switching to bill.com next month, you know, go watch this video or something, you know. So you need to, it's kind of like a sales pitch internally, I guess, you know, to build people up to understanding, you know, the pain, because I don't care how well you do it, there's going to be pain of some kind surrounding a change like that. It's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah. And speaking of team and managing all of that, with our next question focuses on talent management. How can we align our talent strategy with financial goals to ensure sustained growth?
Okay. Best done by strategic planning and forecasting with a roadmap. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. You have to look forward. You have to project. You have to anticipate to the best of your ability what the future holds and be able to build up the team with the right people in the right seats, as they say, because, you know, that again, there's production side, how many people do you need to produce? But then there's also this stable foundation of your ops team and your leadership team and your marketing team and all those things that you need to keep in mind and balance out as well. You obviously have to have enough sales to support non-sales producing positions, but those non-sales producing positions are just as important in a business and to helping you structure your business so that you can grow and so that you can create more freedom as an owner of the business. Otherwise, you just end up picking up the slack in all of it. So you end up being the, you know, marketing person and the ops person and the whatever it might be. And additionally, that doesn't work out well, not only because it's definitely stressing and adding a lot of time to you. It takes you away from working on the business, looking forward for the business. It takes you away from, you know, making those better deals, maybe higher level deals for your revenue production. And everything's getting done not to par. I mean, ultimately, you're not going to be able to keep up with all of it. It's just not going to be the best that it could be without putting those positions in place. So we need to think through what that structure needs to look like as you grow and start plugging in where you can over time. Where do those people need to come in? So we're, you know, again, just being strategic about that. Also on the, I guess, flip side, that does take careful planning, because you can say, well, I want this person by this year or this month in this year or something like that. But then you got to back into finding that person because that can take a while, as we all know. Right. So you got to say, it's probably going to take me maybe 90 days. I'm just throwing out numbers to find this person. And you want to make sure that you have good systems for attracting, recruiting people, good talent, people that fit your core values, your culture, you know, making sure that you're going through those processes to hire the right people, because you're not going to get anywhere if you aren't putting in that upfront work to get the right people as much as possible in place. Is it always 100% successful? No. But if you're doing all that upfront work, your chances of success in getting the right person in the right seat is much higher, creates a lot less chaos, because ultimately if that person, if you don't take the time to vet them, you don't take the time to make sure, you know, they're not only vet them for technical skill, but cultural fit, personality fit, all those other things. If they don't work out, guess whose lap that lands back in usually?
Right.
Back in your lap. So you want to definitely take the time to do that. And that does take, you know, some setup of having a good system of recruitment, vetting, onboarding, et cetera, to set them up for success. So we also need to make sure we have those things in place in our strategic plan, because we can't just get there and be like, okay, now we're going to set all this up and hire people. We have to, over time, get that done, little bits at a time, a little quarter at a time. How do we get to that ultimate goal down the road?
Yeah, great. Now shifting gears from the talent side to looking at customers, next question is focused on customer profitability. Can we analyze the profitability of different customer segments and tailor our approach accordingly?
Absolutely. This is definitely should be a yes answer if you ask this question. But so, you know, I'm kind of answering the question like you're asking me, but if you ask, the answer should be yes. Does it take some work? Yeah, it does. So it can and should be done. You have to take the time to set them up correctly, put the inputs in correctly. If your inputs are bad, your outputs are bad, right? So it will take some time to do that if you didn't set it up like from the beginning. But you can definitely get those things set up, and you should. As you grow your business, you need to be looking at, you know, different divisions, different service lines, whatever it may be. Are they profitable? There's been several times that I've worked with the client to analyze their business, and their business was maybe not struggling in that it wasn't going to survive, but just not cash flowing well, just not making a lot of profit. And they had several business segments. And when it's all mushed together, it gets hard to figure out where the problem is sometimes. So we went through and we segregated the segments of business, and we found that one of those segments of business really was not performing well. It was really dragging. Basically, if they like just got rid of that segment of business, they automatically like boosted their profits and their cash flow. So ultimately they decided to keep it, but they tweaked it to be more profitable because it was a fairly integrated segment. They're like, well, we might lose some of this other two segments if we don't have this segment of business. So, but it was able, we were able to look at why is that segment of business dragging everything down? We needed to price it differently primarily. So when it came down to, and there were some cost things that we did too, but we really could tell segment by segment what was wrong once we did that analysis and broke things down. And that took a little time because, again, on your input side, if you don't input stuff into the segments, you got to go back and separate them out, or you got to set it up and just do it going forward and look at it, you know, from that perspective. So that can be very important. So you need to think about, you know, what is it that you want to look at? You know, do you have locations? Do you have departments? Do you have jobs? And in having all those different things, there are a lot of different trackers that can handle that, but you want to figure out how you want to segregate those things. So, you know, QuickBooks has added, for example, didn't used to have a location in QuickBooks. So you could have a class as a location, or you could have a class as a department, or a class as a profit line revenue driver, and you had to pick. So they're getting a little better now at adding some additional things on there. But, you know, if we have departments set up as classes in QuickBooks, we can't set up service lines as classes. We can't mix and match. It's one or the other. So you have to pick what's the most important. And there's other ways you can track it. So, you know, besides classes, you can use a different revenue line items, and you can use different cost line items so that, you know, you could kind of extract that information into a separate report, like put it in Excel and just grab those ones to see how that service line is doing. So there are other ways. If it's like, no, they're all really important to me, there's other ways to do it, but you have to do it consistently and only one thing in each category, because otherwise you just skew everything and it makes no sense. So we want to make sure that we're talking through all those things upfront when we're setting things up.
That's great. I love the methodical approach to finding out the root cause of something, right? Like, because you can say, oh, the business isn't doing great, and throw the baby out with the bathwater, and it's just not a good business model. But if you really dig in and look, like you said in that example, it might just be, you know, we need to make a couple changes here, and it changes the whole trajectory of the business. So I love, you know, don't just be, I don't want to say lazy, but lazy and not like dig into something or ask the right questions and just like assume things. You know, when you start looking at these things, a lot of times there's a reason for it. So.
Right. Definitely. And it, you know, I know we're accountants and we love the data and we love the details, and, you know, that can be kind of like sometimes, but like in that example, it was hard to see on the surface what the problem was, you know, without doing that additional data, digging, details, et cetera. And then it became apparent. So, you know, so it was good that we put the time and effort, and that the business owner was willing to put the time and cost, you know, into that, because ultimately it made a much more profitable situation. He felt good about like a lot of the decisions he'd been making. Like you said, he was like, what am I doing wrong? You know, kind of like, I don't know.
It's hard to not feel like
making right. But just to have more data to then go, ah, that's the problem. And all these other decisions have not really been a problem. It's just this decision, I was lacking this information to make a better decision here.
Yeah. And I should clarify, not laziness on the business owner's part, but I think, you know, sometimes we work with professionals or experts that come in that, like, maybe you have worked with a CPA or an accountant in the past, and they just, like, they don't have the time to dedicate or whatever it is, or they're just not asking the right questions. So that's the difference between working with an expert who actually takes the time to sit back and analyze these things and think about, well, what are the questions that I need to ask this person to get them thinking on the right track? And that's what I'm talking about as far as, like, how do we actually dig in and find this root cause and get curious about it versus just saying, oh, I don't know, it's just the way it is, you know, it's not working. You know?
Right. Yep. No, good point. Very, very good point for sure.
All right. The last question, question number 10, is focused on scenario planning. So what contingency plans do we have in place for potential economic downturns or unexpected challenges?
Okay. So I think probably I think it's a great question to ask. And I think that the answer comes generally back to forecasting. So you really need that forecast in order to do contingency plans, to do scenario planning. You know, I mean, you can have some basic ideas here and there, like, oh, we'll do this or oh, we'll do that if this happens, but you're not going to really have a full impact picture unless you start with the forecast. And then you would have that dynamic forecast available and you can tweak that at any time. So that's the good thing. You know, I think we've talked in prior episodes about when COVID hit, like, no one expected that, right?
Right.
So, and
right.
It was like, whoa, now what? So, because it affected so many businesses and differently, it affected, you know, some, you know, public serving businesses way more than it affected, you know, service-based businesses that could work remotely, for example. But those that had a forecast already in place, it was really easy then for us to go in and work with them and tweak scenario. Okay, we're going to have to be closed for 2 months at least. And then we don't think we're going to pick back up right away. It's going to come over time. So we're able to take that forecast and tweak with those data points, see the ultimate big picture related to that. So we can put those scenarios in and we can do that at any time with the forecast. We can have that contingency plan already in place. So we can say, well, we're not going to, you know, this is obviously up to how the business owner feels, et cetera, but we can do that at any time. If they see, okay, here's where we think we want to be, but we're going to do maybe the economy doesn't do so great. It's looking a little iffy out there. What's our scenario B? What if this happens? So we can run that contingency plan based on the same set of information with some different inputs that allow us to quickly come to a total picture, a financial picture for the business. So that's it's really hard to do from an overarching full picture, bottom line profits, bottom line cash flow, without already having the structure of a forecast in place. Can we put our finger in the air and kind of guesstimate some things? Yeah, but it just doesn't provide the same level of detail. And as we talked about before, it also forces us to go through that data set. Okay, if this happens, what things are going to be affected? What each line item in that forecast, how is it going to be affected? And how is it going to be or act differently? So it kind of forces us to ask questions we may not think of if we're not going through that process with the forecast.
Perfect. Well, that wraps up our 10 full questions for part one and part two of 10 more strategic questions for your CFO. And as a reminder, we also have episode number 114 that has additional great questions. If you're going into a meeting with a controller or CFO, I think they would apply to both. CFO is obviously going to be able to answer them a little more fully, but good questions to have in your pocket for any type of, you know, financial meeting like this.
Absolutely.
So as we wrap up, Katina, is there anything that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think, again, just, you know, be an active participant in your advisor meetings. So you're meeting with your CPA, your advisor, your tax advisor, your CFO, you need to come in, you know, armed with questions. You need to do a little preparing so that you're getting the most out of those meetings, because ultimately that's why they're there, is to work with you. Now, I'm sure they are hopefully asking you some of these questions as well, but, you know, this is, as we talked about before, it's a dynamic relationship. You get out of it what you put into it and vice versa. So hopefully it's a really good, you know, relationship between the two. But again, if you're coming in just not having that active approach, you're just not going to get as much out of it. So I would suggest and recommend, like I said, you don't have to pick all of the questions, pick some that you're really interested in or some that you think really could have an impact on your business and hone in on those.
Perfect. As we said in the last episode as well, please feel free to check out our website, pjscpas.com. There are a ton of free resources there for you. Not only do we have the podcast, some of those episodes have templates that are free for you to download there, as well as tax calendars, calculators, all kinds of free access to kind of a resource hub for you there. So check it out at pjscpas.com. Also, we have our free discovery call, which is accessible through pjscpas.com/contact. Feel free to sign up there. As always, keep that momentum going, and we will see you next time.
This has been another episode of the Cultivating Business Growth Podcast. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe, rate, and review. Gain access to additional free resources and learning opportunities by visiting pjscpas.com/podcast.